Hello and welcome to Horror Wars. My name is Lamont, and I will be guiding you through this macabre dance of a show where two longtime friends put horror movies against their inevitable remake. Please be aware that horror movies, as a general rule of thumb, have violence, gore, murder, rape, dismemberment, crazy practical effects, and much more. Also, the hosts aren't versed in languages from around the world, so they may mess up some names and places here and there. If none of that bothers you, then get ready for a podcast like none other. This is Horror Wars.
Hello out there to all of our guys, gals, non-binary pals, spooky cuties, hair-raising homies, freaks, geeks, and anything in between with a motherfucking butthole. I'm Rob.
I'm Josh.
And this is
Horror Wars.
We are the show that puts original horror movies against their remakes in an all-out war to determine which will reign supreme. We do this with a series of scores that we give to one or the other to see who comes out on top. This week, we have Jacob's Ladder from 1990 versus Jacob's Ladder from 2019.
Not only that, but we also have multiple segments throughout the show as well. Death Peddling is where we usually discuss current events going on in the world of horror, provided by MacabreDaily.com, and sometimes news about us too.
Horror Club is where we review a film book club style, and we'll provide a bit of background before we give it a grading of pass, rent, or buy. This week, we take a look at Shutter Island from 2010.
Sheesh. And then we get into our list of doom, where we discuss the episode's top five. This episode, our list is top five movies about PTSD. Mm-hmm. And then we follow that with the horrors of gaming, where we talk about horror-related games. On this episode, we're discussing Heavy Rain from 2010.
Yeah, that's a heavy hitter right there. Pun intended.
Yep.
Yeah. Finally, we close up shop with our ending segment called The End, where we have our final thoughts on this episode and reveal the next episode of Horror Tube. So, with all that out of the way, let's get into it.
Death Peddling. We begin the show by wetting your macabre-loving black heart with news and events in the realm of horror that are important to the week we're recording. Also, every now and again, we'll have something to say regarding the host. But don't worry, it's not very often. We really hate talking about ourselves.
Storm, author of the book You're Dead, I'm Rich. A small college town is in shock after the unthinkable has happened. A brutal killing spree that left one teen dead, that's it, two teens dead, and this small town shaken and stirred. It's times like these.
Police are combing the area for clues. It seems there are no witnesses available at this time.
There are no suspects in custody. Police are asking anyone to come forward.
Report live for Black TV. White folks are dead. We're getting the fuck out of here. Let's roll, Jack. Fuck that shit. Let's go, motherfucker. Go, go.
And it's time for the news, is what I normally say. But as with the last episode, we have a show to plug.
Indeed we do. So let's get it out of the way. Got to get myself together for this one. New Jersey Horror Collective will be at our first convention. We're going to be live from the event and doing episodes while having a lot of fun with giveaways and other things still being planned. South Jersey Geek Fest, the 10-year celebration, will be held on Saturday, March 3rd, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. $15 entry, and if you bring in non-perishable foods, you get a discount. Now, it's going to be at the Gateway Regional High School at 775 Tanyard Road. In some maps, it says it's in Blackwood Terrace, and some maps it says it's something Heights, Blackwood Heights or something, I don't know. Some maps it says it's 08097, some maps say it's 08096. I don't know, but it's Gateway Regional High School, and the road is 775 Tanyard Road. Our first con appearance is marked by our first spring event. As everyone knows, we have our fall event named Samhain's Havoc, and as we revealed last episode, the name of our spring event is Ostara's Harmony. The event will be happening at our tables within South Jersey Geek Fest. Come say hi, play games, and have some fun with the other vendors there too. Online ticket sales are live on the site as well. Tickets will also be available for purchase at the event too.
It's going to be pretty cool, dude. It's our first convention, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be sick.
Yeah. I'm really excited to do it. I do have to still get everybody together in a group chat to coordinate things, especially now that we have our looting, unlooting times, this, that, and everything in between. So expect to be added into a group chat some point this week.
Okay.
Because it'll be, we're going to have to coordinate everybody, like I said. But I guess with that out of the way, excuse me, sorry, I have the burps. It's about that time. Remember, we get all of our inside scoops of blood and guts from macabredaily.com. So Josh, what are we starting with, sir?
We have some Halloween news, it seems.
Yeah.
So we have upcoming Halloween TV series from Miramax will be complete a creative reset for the franchise. More Michael Myers. He's been shot 6 times, hacked to bits with his own knife, and even torn to shreds by an industrial shredder. But that isn't keeping Michael Myers down one bit. Well, the Halloween franchise anyway is still alive and thumping. Miramax has the rights to the franchise and are actively working on a TV series based around John Carpenter's original 1978 film, Halloween. Miramax head Mark Helwig provides an update to Deadline this week. What can we expect from the Halloween TV series, you ask? For starters, don't expect any kind of continuation to the storyline from David Gordon Green's Halloween trilogy. The foundation of it is the original film. The John Carpenter movie, the characters of that film, and perhaps a group of characters that we haven't really focused on that much in recent film versions, or even in a number of them, Helwig teases. It's a creative reset completely and going back to the original film, as opposed to spinning out of any of the more recent film adaptations. Helwig also notes, "We're on a fast track, it's a big priority for us. We've had lots of exciting conversations in recent months with a number of really talented people, and I think we'll have a pretty good idea of what we're going to be doing very soon. We're hoping to lock down the creative team very soon." He used soon twice.
Yeah, he did.
As a reminder, Miramax co-owns the Halloween film rights alongside Trancast. In other words, the new universe from Miramax and Trancast could potentially span film and television. By Samuel Santiago. I'm always so happy when you do that.
Yes. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this.
Do you feel burnt out with Halloween and this franchise?
I don't know how to... Because, look, I don't think I feel burnt out with the franchise. I think I feel burnt out with the resets.
Yes, okay.
Okay? Because this is now... We've gone back to the first film 3 times now. And if this is going to take place after the first film, then that completely negates the trilogy that, mm-hmm. that happened. Like they said, it's a complete right. negation of that. Then it also negates the other films. It negates everything. So we're setting up a brand new timeline spawning out of the first fucking movie again.
All of these timelines, man.
I'm so glad that it's really only Halloween doing this.
I honestly thought Texas Chainsaw was going to start.
Texas Chainsaw is, but they're not rebooting again.
Okay.
The movie that they released in 2022 is going to be built upon.
Okay. Which is technically was the sequel to the very first one,
right? So yeah. It was the requels or whatever they're called now. So the original one came out, then in 2022. Now the next one is going to be off of the 2022 one.
Okay.
Supposedly. We can never fucking know anymore. But I am glad that, you know, Jason and Freddy just kind of had, like, the remake aspect of things and they didn't have anything else, to be honest. Either way, though, on my bit of the news, Jason Blum gives updates on the future of the Exorcist franchise at Blumhouse. Yet another big property that kind of got shit on because the Exorcist movie was so bad last year.
I was about to say, didn't they just come out with one?
Yeah, earlier? Yeah. There's no denying that last year's The Exorcist Believer didn't deliver the goods for the fans at the box office or for Blumhouse and Universal. Director David Gordon Green was initially on board to direct an entire trilogy of new movies in the franchise, with The Exorcist Believer intended to be the only the first film in that 3-film series. This was a major deal for Blumhouse and Universal, somewhere in the range of $400 million.
Holy shit.
And already had the sequel, Exorcist Deceiver, set up for April 18th, 2025 release. Like most things in Hollywood, things change from the original idea. David Gordon Green is out to direct Deceiver, and the film as a whole is, and even the franchise might just be a one-off. So what's next for Blumhouse and Universal to do with the fan-favorite franchise and its loyal and die-hard fans who just want a great Exorcist flick? Tis a question that even producer James Blum isn't sure how to answer. Speaking with a direct this week, Blum suggests that the original plan is being entirely retooled. Blum explained in a recent red carpet chat, "We are definitely going to make another Exorcist movie, but I wanted more time to figure out what that would be. I have no idea what it's going to be yet." Given the $400 million to spend, Blumhouse and Universal will likely have no choice but to make two more Exorcist movies, but it does sound like the next one may hit the reboot button all over again.
Another reboot!
This would be a waste in our opinion, but hey, what do we know? Bye. Samuel Santiago. So, David Gordon Green has officially fucked two franchises.
Yep.
Because that's literally the news that we've got today. David Gordon Green needs to just stay away from horror.
Or at least, like, franchises. Like, make your own shit, dude, please.
You can't do Halloween right. You can't do Exorcist right. You can't, like, I don't know, man.
That's just a shame.
Yeah, it's kind of shitty that both of the news stories were about him.
Mm-hmm.
But, look, neither of those movies, or neither the trilogy of his Halloween movies, the first one was good, but the other two progressively got worse.
Mm.
And then Believer was okay.
I haven't seen that yet.
I didn't see the negative things, like why it was so negative, but hey, the vast majority of the public hated it. What do I know? I'm just a movie watcher too.
Well, I was going to ask, since I haven't seen it, what do people not like about it?
The fact that it doesn't explore Christian or Catholic religions, and it shows that there's other religions around the world, and that the main character from the original Exorcist talks about the patriarchy, but she's literally talking about the church. She's not talking about the role of a man as the patriarch of a family. She's talking about the Catholic Church, and because of the way today's culture is, they take patriarchy as talking about a male that is the patriarch of the family. And it's, but then again, that's just a lack of understanding of words. So
I think you actually talked about it a little bit when we did Flatliners.
Yeah, with Gab.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, for more horror news, reviews, articles, interviews, and so much more, visit macabredaily.com today and every day. They are the dark side of pop culture.
Mm.
The war, the reason everyone's here. This is the main segment of our show. We put a horror film against its remake. We go stat for stat, financials, facts, where to watch, synopsis, cast, and everything in between. Afterwards, we grade them both on a scorecard, we tally up those results, and we see who wins the day.
Well, you've done it to yourself this time, haven't you?
Am I dying, Louie? From a slip disc? That'll be a first. I was in hell. I don't want to die, Louie.
Well, I'll see what I can do about it.
It's all pain. Straighten out your head.
Relax. You ever read Meistercard?
No.
How'd you get your doctor without reading that card? Relax. Okay, good. Now turn over gently. Right side. The other right, okay? You're a regular basket case, you know that? Eckhart saw hell, too. You know what he said? He said the only thing that burns in hell is the part of you that won't let go of your life. Your memories, attachments, they burn them all away. But they're not punishing you, he said. They're freeing your soul. Relax. So the way he sees it, if you're frightened of dying and you're holding on, you'll see devils tearing your life away. But if you've made your peace, then the devils are really angels freeing you from the earth. It's just a matter of how you look at it, that's all. So don't worry, okay? Okay?
And welcome to the war.
As with every episode, we're going to tell you where we get all of our glorious information from. We source pieces from Wikipedia, IMDb, Just Watch, and Rotten Tomatoes mainly. Sometimes we have to dig a little deeper, but we shout out where we get that info from when applicable.
Also, when we give the information on where to watch these films, please keep in mind that they might not be available on those services by the time you may listen to the episode. So please head to Just Watch for all your viewing needs.
With that being said, let's break down how we go about scoring these movies to determine our winner. We go through the stats, the crew, the cast, the runtime, and everything in between to get our results. At the end, we discuss our reasoning for where we place the points and why in a series of 11 categories. They are acting, directing, writing slash plot, killer or killers, casting, soundtrack, gore slash kills, pacing, time period, environment, and finally, the end.
And as Lamont said in the intro of this segment, we tally up our individual scores, combine them, and the one with the highest score wins the day. After that, we send it off to all of you and let you vote in our poll on Instagram after every episode is posted. Now that that is out of the way, it's time for the war.
Goddamn right, baby.
Girls gathered in their masses.
Ozzy, please, you wrote the lyrics, dude. Those are not the right ones.
He's never going to sing the right lyrics. Never. But I have feelings about these movies today.
They're definitely interesting.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to utilize negative points today?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Because I think the remake is going to get a lot more... I don't think we're going to bash it as much as online does.
Right.
But you know how we're going to get to those results?
By getting through the war.
The war. All right. So, I'm going to take the OG today. And I'm going to get a sip of water first. Because this is going to be a lot of talking. So, the movie's name is Jacob's Ladder. Runtime, 1 hour, 53 minutes. Release date, November 2nd, 1990. Produced by Alan Marshall and Mario Casar. Production company is Carl Co. Pictures, with a budget of $25 million. Box office was $26.1 million.
Barely made it back.
Barely made it back. Screenplay by Bruce Joel Rubin, directed by Adrian Lin, and cinematography by Jeffrey K. Kimball. Edited by Tom Rolfe. Music by Maurice Jarre. Where to watch? Currently, you're able to watch Jacob's Ladder streaming on Pluto TV for free with ads. It is also possible to rent or buy as a download on Apple TV, Amazon Video, Vudu, Microsoft Store, Google Play Movies, and YouTube. Whew. Ratings, 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, 88% on Just Watchadoo. Plot. Mourning his dead child, the haunted Vietnam War veteran attempts to uncover his past while suffering from a severe case of disassociation. To do so, he must decipher reality and life from his own dreams, delusions, and perceptions of death. Related media, not applicable. Trivia, 20 more on IMDb. 1. Jacob's Ladder greatly inspired the horror franchise Silent Hill, including the video games Silent Hill 1999, Silent Hill 2001, Silent Hill 2003, Silent Hill 4 The Room 2004, and Silent Hill Homecoming from 2007. as well as the series 2006 film adaptation by Christoph Gans.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I guess if we never had this movie, we wouldn't have Silent Hill.
We wouldn't have Silent Hill.
That is fucking nuts.
Yep. This is one of the direct inspirations of Silent Hill. Like, seriously.
Well, shit.
And also we can add the 2024 Christoph Gans Return to Silent Hill movie that's coming out later this year.
Yep.
Number two, all special effects were filmed live with no post-production. For example, to achieve the famous shaking head effect, director Adrian Lin simply filmed the actor waving his head around and keeping his shoulders and the rest of his body completely still at 4 frames per second, resulting in an incredibly fast and deeply disturbing motion when played back at the normal frame rate of 24 frames per second. Fucking sick. Number three, certain imagery was inspired by the photographs of Joel Peter Witkin. Most recognizably, the image of the hooded, legless man shaking his head is inspired by Witkin's 1976 photograph, The Man with No Legs. Number four, the Bergen Street station in the film was actually an abandoned lower-level portion of the station, which had to be retiled and fixed to look as if it was still in working condition.
Shit, they fooled me. I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Number five, in a 2015 retrospective on the film, Tim Robbins said that one of the reasons he thought it didn't do well at the box office was how the film's violent, harrowing scenes in Vietnam didn't jive with the audience, with the national mood of the fall of 1990 during the run-up of the Gulf War. Number six, according to director Adrian Lin, the drug aspect of the story was inspired by the Martin Lee and Bruce Shilan book Acid Dreams, the CIA, LSD, and 60s Rebellion. Number seven, Sidney Lumet, Michael Apted, and Ridley Scott all tried to get the project greenlit during its several-year period of non-production. Ridley Scott tried to get this off the fucking ground. Could you imagine if Ridley Scott were to have been the one to do this? Like, that's Alien. That's, you know.
I was going to say, like, I don't feel like this movie was bad, just starting out now, but man, Ridley Scott attached to that.
Yeah, that would have been. Yeah. Number eight, actors who were allegedly interested in playing the lead role of Jacob Singer included Richard Gere, Dustin Hoffman, and Al Pacino.
That would have, okay.
Yeah, but Tim Robbins got it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, wow. For the role of Jesse, director Adrian Lin auditioned roughly 300 women, including Jennifer Lopez, Andie MacDowell, Madonna, Demi Moore, and Julia Roberts. The role eventually went to the first person who auditioned, Elizabeth Peña. Number nine, prior to the commencement of filming, former U.S. Marine Dale Dye took actors Tim Robbins, Pruitt Taylor Vince, Eric LaSalle, Ving Rhames, Brian Tarantia, Brent Hinckley, and Anthony Alessandro to a 5-day military boot camp. Number 10, Macaulay Culkin's father felt that the movie did not fit his son's image, therefore he requested that his son's name be removed from the credits. Culkin portrayed Gabe, Jacob's deceased son.
That's weird.
Right. Macaulay Culkin, I don't think, even hit popular yet at that point.
Because when did Home Alone come out?
Like 92 or 93. He was still pretty young at this point, so. Cast. Tim Robbins as Jacob Professor Singer. Elizabeth Peña as Jezebel, Jesse Pipkin. Danny Aleo as Louis, Louis DiNardo. Matt Craven as Michael Newman. Pruitt Taylor Vince as Paul Grunegger. Jason Alexander as Mr. Geary. Patricia Kelmber as Sarah Singer. Eric LaSalle as Frank. Ving Rhames as George.
He's back.
For the, what, third episode in a row?
Mm-hmm.
Brian Tarantina as Doug. Anthony Alessandro as Rod. Brent Hinckley as Jerry, S. Ipatha Murickson as Elsa, John Capotes as Army Officer, Kyle Gass as Tony, Louis Black as Jacob's Doctor, Perry Lang as Jacob's Assailant, and Macaulay Culkin as Gabriel Gabe Singer.
What a cast.
What a
all, just
fucking cast.
Holy
what
shit.
A cast.
So, yeah, we have the remake. Jacob's Ladder, with a runtime of 1 hour and 29 minutes. So the sweet spot.
The sweet spot, yeah.
I'll be honest, sometimes for me it felt like it kind of drug a little bit, but yeah. Release date, August 23rd, 2019. Produced by Will Packer, Mickey Liddell. Holy shit, there's so many producers.
Yeah.
Michael J. Gaeta, Allison R. Rosenwig, Pete Schilliman, and Jennifer Monroe. So many producers.
Yep.
Production companies, LD Entertainment, Gaeta / Rosenwig Films, and Will Packer Productions. Budget, not applicable. Box office, not applicable.
Yep.
Because it never went to theaters.
Nope.
Screenplay by Jeff Buhler, Sarah Thorpe, and Jake Wade Wall. Directed by David M. Rosenthal. Cinematography by Pedro Lecue. Sure.
Yep.
Edited by Richard Mettler. And music by Alti Orvason. Sure.
Yes. That name.
Where to watch? Currently, you're able to watch Jacob's Ladder streaming on Hoopla. With subscription. It's also possible to rent or buy Jacob's Ladder on Amazon Video, Vudu, Microsoft Store, AMC On Demand, Apple TV, Google Play Movies, and YouTube. The ratings. Holy shit.
Yep.
A 3.6 out of 10 on IMDb. 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And 30% on Just Watch It Do. There was another movie that got a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes that we covered recently too.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that movie deserved the 4%. I'm pretty sure, I think it was the remake of the Sarah Michelle Gellar movie.
Yeah.
I think that one was like a 4 or 8 or something like that.
The plot. After losing his brother in combat, Jacob Singer, returns home from Afghanistan only to be pulled into a mind-twisting state of paranoia. Singer soon realizes that his sibling is alive, but life is not what it seems. With his life now altered, he must figure out what is real and what is not. Related media, non-applicable. Trivia. Zero more on IMDb. Number one. Had been in post-production for almost 2 years and had been finished for nearly a year without being screened.
Jesus.
Number two. At 55 minutes into the movie, Jacob, Michael Ealy, is driving with his brother Isaac, Jesse Williams, but the reflection from Isaac in the car window is actually Jacob. I feel like that's just more of like a spoiler thing. Yeah. You know, just describing the movie.
Right.
Number three, Michael Ealy and Joseph Sikora both co-starred in The Intruder 2019.
Yep.
Okay. Number four, the website Movie Insider doesn't have this movie's release date and uses the poster from the original movie instead of stills and the poster from this movie. Wow.
Yep.
And then there are no more.
Nope.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember I told I wasn't going to, you know, do 9,000 hunts for things.
Yep.
I literally looked for about 10 minutes, couldn't find anything even remotely applicable, and said, fuck it.
Nope.
Nope.
I don't blame you. The cast, which is very short.
Yep.
Michael Ealy as Jacob Singer, Jesse Williams as Isaac Singer, Nicole Beharie as Samantha Singer, Carla Souza as Annie / Angel, and Guy Burnett as Hoffman.
Yep. Oh, boy.
So, I feel... like, we've kind of run into these, like, remakes are kind of poo-poo. But it's just, like, this remake wasn't terrible. No. But it's just comparing it to its original. It's hard to kind of give it its praises.
Yeah, it's super hard because the original Jacob's Ladder is, even though, I guess you could say it became a cult classic.
Right.
It's amazing. It's lower budget for, you know, a movie, I guess you could say. But it was amazing. The way that they did it, the visuals, even watching it today in 2024, it's like, wow. They really kind of did a lot.
It was my first time seeing, like, either Jacob's Ladder.
Right.
And it's funny, too, because when I watched the original, I was like, okay, so main character's got to be dead.
Right.
That's kind of what I just thought right from the beginning. There's no way. Right. And then when it started out and I saw the runtime and then it kind of showed the army scenes and all that stuff, I was like, okay, so we're going to be in the jungle for a while.
Right.
And then it cuts to them being in the city and it's like, what?
Yeah.
And just the way that, when we get into it, the way the plot progresses, it's just like, it keeps you guessing.
It does.
The remake kind of does. And it's not just because you already see the original so you know what's going to happen. They kind of do their own thing. You can see references from the original. But yeah,
I think the more urban setting of it is really the only differential. Yeah. Like you said, they take a lot of the same things. They just twisted it to a newer war.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of the son, it's the brother. So I guess let's get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right. Acting.
Original. Like, I'll be honest, like, I, you know, I get involved in these movies, you know, when the emotion is supposed to be there. If you're supposed to feel sad, I feel sad. This fucking movie with the acting made me feel sad.
Oh yeah,
I got teary eyed in parts. I was not expecting that from this movie at all. The acting is top tier.
Yeah, it, the remake, not to take anything away from these guys and gals that were in the movie, they did the best they could with the screenplay script that they had, with that script that they had. They really did. So even though I'm giving my point to acting from the OG as well, even if the acting in the OG wasn't so great, there wouldn't be a negative point to the remake. Like, I wouldn't be able to do it. It would just be, you know, I would have to give it to, like, the OG or something. I wouldn't give this a negative. Mm-hmm. Directing.
I'm going to give it the original. The amount of, like, areas we get, the post office, the subway, even just, like, just the normal-ass, like, city streets we saw. Yeah. It felt like there was some kind of weird mystery. Like, there was something, like, some ghost over your shoulder. It's fucking weird. It gives you this eerie feeling the whole time.
Yeah, whether you're in an apartment, a home from the past, like you said, anything, even the veterans office, all of it, the asylum.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. When it cuts to like the hospital kind of stuff, it's like, what the fuck? Dude, when they have him strapped down to that gurney, just the look of that disgusting ass room.
Yeah.
Top tier.
Top tier. Exactly. There's nothing. You're 100% right. Also, the director of this movie did movies like Basic Instinct and Fatal Attraction and stuff like that. Never really touched horror. This was like the first horror movie that they touched. And then also that goes with the writer as well. The writer had done other movies, like nowhere's even near the horror genre.
Wow, I didn't know
and,
that.
And he wrote Ghost.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote fucking Ghost. Won Academy Awards for that. Didn't win any type of recognition for Jacob's Ladder. Go figure.
That is crazy.
Yeah, both came out in the same year, too.
Really?
Yeah,
holy
both
shit.
Came out in 1990.
So did Flatliners.
So did Flatliners. Yeah, so, I mean, look, 1990 was a crazy fucking year for movies. But writing / plot, I'm
giving it to the OG.
OG. Yeah, same here. Again, not to take away from the remake. Right. The remake had a good plot. The writing, though... Mm-hmm. That screenplay really fucking killed the movie. But as I told you before we started recording, it was also written by the guy that wrote Pet Sematary from 2021, I think it was.
I feel like if they didn't do as a remake to the original Jacob's Ladder, and it was kind of its own kind of horror film,
right.
I feel like it would have gotten more love.
I think if you called it Jacob's Ladder, but went with your own story, because Jacob's Ladder is about personal trials, tribulations, all that, which, as we said earlier, it's the basis for Silent Hill. Mm-hmm. If they could have just literally, the guy's name could have been Jacob Dot. It didn't have to be Jacob Singer. It could have been Jacob something else. Mm-hmm. You could have told your story, told everything. Yeah, you still could have called it Jacob's Ladder. You didn't have to change the name. But you could have made it exactly kind of how Silent Hill is. Every person goes in with their own trauma, their own experiences, their own everything.
That's what you get.
So Jacob's Ladder at that point becomes an entity, like a state of mind or something, versus like a remake.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, that would be the way that I would have approached it. But I think that script, that really hampered everything that movie had going for it. There's no real killer in this, in either of the movies.
I guess you could say, like, okay.
Who had the worst psychosis?
I will go with the original because of, like, the experiment they put on them. They killed each other.
Okay.
So there we could go. I felt like it was a little stronger because it felt like chaos. Because all of that reveal, well, not the reveal, but all of that, like, you seeing his platoon, all of them dying and shit.
Yeah.
I was even like, what the fuck? You see, like, Ving Rhames' character. He's just drinking water.
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, man, we see enemies in the tree line. And then he's just on the ground having a seizure. And it's like, what in the fuck is going on?
And then they all appear later on in the movie, but,
But, so I'm going to give it to OG.
I won't disagree with you. I'll give it to OG as well. Again, that's not to say that the remake didn't have bad in this one, just the original was that much better. I might as well just put our points down for the OG on this one. Casting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Stacked ass cast. There's holy shit.
Really no other explanation. Mm-hmm. I mean, from Kyle Gass to fucking Lewis Black to Jason Alexander, Tim Robbins, just... Come on, man.
As soon as Ving I Rhames. Saw Tim Robbins, I was like, is that the dude from Shawshank Redemption?
And this movie, I actually was listening to something earlier today about this. This movie is the reason why he got Shawshank.
Really?
Yes. Oh, because they showed the writer of Shawshank this movie, and he wanted Tim Robbins from the beginning. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's pretty goddamn dope. So Tim Robbins acted his ass off and got Shawshank out of it.
And then that put him into the stratosphere. Yep,
exactly. And he doesn't do horror like that.
Yep.
This is really his only kind of like foray into the horror movie world, except for like maybe one or two more suspenses that he did.
And it's also funny because I didn't know how tall that fucking dude is. He's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Holy shit. When at the end, when he's walking into like his apartment or whatever, and he's going up the stairs, I thought his head was going to hit the chandelier.
Oh, what, when he was walking with Macaulay up those steps?
Like the very ending of that? I was like, holy shit, dude, this guy's a giant.
Yeah, it's fucking huge. Soundtrack?
I'm giving it to OG, and I was even, I forget who I was talking to about this, but when the music hit to where it was a sad scene, I felt sad. Yes. Like, I know a lot of soundtracks you can say, like, oh man, it's supposed to make you feel scared and stuff. But when it got to, like, him just crying when he saw the picture of his son, I felt sad.
And... can I say, at that point, fuck Jezebel? Because
burning all the pictures?
Is this your dead one? Is this the one that's dead? And like, come on.
Yeah, a bitch. I'm Jesus. Sorry. That's bitchy
fucking
shit.
Christ. Yeah.
Like, I get it. She was like, I don't like stuff that makes you cry. But you're going to burn a picture of his son? Come on.
Yeah.
No.
No. I know. Yeah, that wasn't cool. You got anything else you want to say on the soundtrack? Gore slash kills, OG.
I'm going to say OG because the practical effects, dude.
OG, yeah.
Like, I would say, like, the one dude who had, like, his leg blown off, it reminded me of Saving Private Ryan with the guy looking for his arm on the beach.
Yep.
And I was just like, oh, my God, what the fuck? I was not expecting that from this movie.
Yeah, this movie, the cover shows you that you should be expecting some crazy shit.
Right.
But you don't really think that you're going to get this level of fucking crazy. In this random box art. Because it looks like it came out of the fucking $5 bin at Walmart.
You are 100% right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't look like it's anything special. Because they never gave the cover the love that it deserves. But, the gore, I guess you would say, from the OG is really top-notch. And like you said, the special effects, the slowing down of the camera, the doing everything like that, perfect. Fucking perfect.
I also want to go back to the writing and the plot for the original. I also like the fact that they weren't so, like, obvious with the demon angel thing.
Yeah.
You know, they kept saying, like, oh, you're already dead.
Yeah.
And that made you think, like, is he? Or do they mean just, like, is he dead inside because he's the only one that survived?
Right.
Even though we see his teammates later.
Or is he dead inside because of his son?
Right, and all that. And then the fact of, like, his chiropractor kind of being, like, his guardian angel. But they never really say it.
Yeah.
So, I've never seen the original, and I really like this movie.
pacing.
Oh, I'm giving it to the original. Even though it's longer, that hour and 30 at some points for the remake just feels like it's 2 hours and 30 minutes. Like, holy shit.
I fully agree with you. There's really no other to expand on, I guess you would say. Like, That 1 hour and 53 minutes, just real quick, it told the story that it needed to tell.
Yep.
I don't think it would have benefited from shaving a minute here or shaving anything there. I liked it the way that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks volumes because you did shave 20-some minutes off of it for the remake, and you condensed the story.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hit...
Trying to do too much with too little time.
Yeah, didn't hit... This is one of those cases where the movie needed to breathe a little bit. Yep. And it didn't benefit from the sweet spot.
I agree.
Unfortunately. Time period.
both matched a time period. I think personally I'm going to go with the OG simply because it takes place in Vietnam. It takes place with when we know that they were doing chemical warfare. They were doing crazy things. They were testing things on people. They left which war the remake was kind of vague. Yeah. They left a lot of things vague, but we got definitive things with the OG, and we know where we can place this movie.
Especially when they finally reveal the experiment that they did.
Yeah, so, and Z and all that shit. Like, yeah, for me personally, I'm going with OG on this because we have actual, like...
Yeah, same.
And we know what horrors Vietnam was. So... environment.
OG. And see, that's one of the things about this movie that I love. Even though it's like a bunch of flashbacks and it feels like it's these different timelines and shit. It feels so good because it touches everything perfectly, the storytelling.
And I think like what I was telling you earlier, the environment or just the overall look of the remake, it was that gritty, oversaturated, like
the typical
action
remake
movie. Well, yeah, the typical remake, but it had also that like where everything was like super defined.
Yeah,
like every detail was super defined, like
oversaturated
or like arbiture or something, like over defined.
Yeah.
Like it looked like when that craze was going on in like the early 2000s, like 2010 to 2015, where all the sports stars were doing like those real crazy defined pictures.
Yep.
It looked like that. And I think that kind of took away from the movie for me because I was like, okay, can we tone it down a little bit? I want muted colors. I want like,
it's almost like they wanted to be a comic book.
Yeah,
kinda like that
they
kind
wanted
of,
it to pop out at the screen, and it benefited in some spots, absolutely. Right. But just I would have really loved those dark, muted tones for this type of movie. And I think we got a clean sweep.
Yeah, it's
a the ending of the OG is just fucking heartbreaking.
I cried. I literally cried.
It's 22-0. There's
and the fact that like we see him walk up with his son essentially into the afterlife.
Into the afterlife after he's been cleansed.
Right.
After, you know.
And then we see what's really going on, and we see him on the, I don't even know what they're called, the bed in the army tent, and he shows that he's dead.
Yeah.
And it ends with them putting his dog tags on the desk. They walk out and then it just fades to black and credits. Perfect. They didn't make it seem like there was going to be a sequel.
Nope.
We just got an ending, and that was it. And it was just like, oh, wow.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'll go fuck myself then.
Thanks for making me cry.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the OG.
The remake isn't terrible.
No, it's not.
But just like with A Tale of Two Sisters, when you can compare one to the other, it's just the original is just going to take it.
It didn't have enough love.
Yeah.
Didn't have enough time to cook.
Nope.
That's the unfortunate nature of it. But as we say with every episode, now that we've said our piece, we're going to put this up on Instagram and we're going to take a poll, see what everybody else has to say. I'm pretty sure we already know the answer to this one before anything goes up. But holla at us. Let us know.
Yep.
What you think? What you think? Oh, God. I can't turn it off. I can never turn off the war. Why?
Horror Club. Each episode, we pick a film that complements the war. We then review it under a series of categories and ultimately tell you whether we think you should pass, rent, or buy.
I've had enough of this bullshit. Where's my partner, huh? Where's Chuck? Where is he?
Let's try this another way. Your wife's maiden name was Chanel, am I correct?
Don't you even talk about her, don't
you? I'm afraid I have to. Notice anything these four names have in common? It's your rule of four. Andrew, what do you see?
If you've done anything to my partner, Doctor, that is a violation of...
Focus, Andrew, what do you see? The names have the same letters. Edward Daniels has exactly the same 13 letters as Andrew Ladis. The same as Rachel Solando and Dolores Chanel. The names are anagrams for each other.
Yeah, tactics. They're not going to work on
you. You came here for the truth.
Here it is.
Your name is Andrew Ladis. The 67th patient at Ashcliff is you, Andrew.
Bullshit.
You were committed here by court order 24 months ago. Your crime is terrible. One you can't forgive yourself for, so you invented another self.
Let's get down to the facts.
You've created a story in which you're not a murderer, you're a hero, still a U.S. Marshal, only here at Ashcliff because of a case, and you've uncovered a conspiracy so that anything we tell you about who you are, what you've done, you can dismiss as lies, Andrew.
My name is Edward Daniels.
I've been hearing this fantasy for 2 years now. I know every detail. Patient 67, the storm, Rachel Salando, your missing partner, the dreams you have every night.
You were at Dachau, but you may not have killed any guards.
I wish I could let you just live in your fantasy world. I really do. But you're violent, trained, dangerous. You're the most dangerous patient we have.
Well, hey. Nice to see you. We think it's time for you to sit back, relax, hang out, smoke something, and vibe. It's time for Horror Club, our movie review done book club style. So, let's discuss how this works. Much like with The War, we have a series of talking points that include acting, gore slash kills, directing, pacing, writing slash plot, killer or killers, cast, and soundtrack.
Those categories sound familiar. It's because they are. We basically use a lot of the same things we do from The War because we find them to be the simplest and best way to come to our conclusions.
With that said, let's talk about it.
Woo! Yeah! Shutter Island. Yes!
Do you want to do the beginning and stuff, and I'll take the cast. Do you want to do this?
Yeah, sure.
All right, yeah.
So, go movie ahead. Name, Shutter Island. Release date, February 19th, 2010. A runtime of 2 hours and 18 minutes. Don't feel like it.
Nope.
The budget, $80 million USD. At the box office, it made $294.8 million USD.
Yeah.
Production companies, Phoenix Pictures, Sicilia Productions, and Appian Way Productions. Produced by Mike Medavoy, Arnold W. Macer, Bradley J. Fisher, and Martin Scorsese.
Of course.
Screenplay by Leta, what? Calogridis. Interesting last name.
Hey, but you did it.
Hey. Directed by Martin Scorsese. Cinematography by Robert Richardson. I don't know why I said that so weird. Edited by... probably one of the coolest last names, Thelma Schoonmaker.
Yeah, Schoonmaker. Not to be confused with Shoemaker. Mm-hmm. It's actually Schoonmaker.
Music by non-applicable. Plot. World War II soldier turned U.S. Marshal Teddy Daniels investigates the disappearance of a patient from a hospital for the criminally insane. But his efforts are compromised by his troubling visions and also a mysterious doctor.
Is this me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio as Edward Daniels slash Andrew Ladis, both U.S. Marshals. Mark Ruffalo as Chuck Ayul slash Dr. Lester Sheehan. Ben Kingsley as Dr. John Cowley. Max von Sydow as Dr. Nayring. Michelle Williams as Dolores Daniels. Emily Mortimer as Rachel One. Patricia Clarkson as Rachel 2, Jackie Earl Haley as George Noyce, Ted Levine.
I didn't even put that together.
Ted Levine as Warden. Is that like Chris Jericho's dad, Ted Levine? John Carroll Lynch as Deputy Warden McPherson. Jesus Christ.
Who I'm pretty sure is Buffalo whatever from Sons of the Lambs.
Yeah, Buffalo Bill.
Yep.
Yeah. Joseph Sikora as Glenn Miga, Elias Cotius as Latus, Robert Bartlett as Bridget Kearns, Christopher Denham as Pete Breen, Curtis Cook as Trey Washington. Jesus Christ. God damn. Like, that was all fucking ridiculous names. Must read film fact. The quote, "Remember us for we too have lived, loved, and laughed," seen on a plaque on the way to the mental institution, is taken from Medfield's Vine Lake Cemetery. A contest was held to come up with a quote to be used on a stone marker as a remembrance of those who died in the 1918 influenza epidemic known as the Spanish flu.
Well, shit.
Yep. So, acting.
I mean, look, this is going to go right into the cast.
All right.
Amazing acting. Everyone, when he's interviewing all the, quote, patients.
Yeah.
They're acting. You really feel like they know some secret about this fucking place.
Yeah.
I forget her name, but when she's talking about what she did to her husband, and he's just like listening, he's like scribbling on that notepad over and over, and then he sends, she asks for a glass of water. Chuck, the Mark Ruffalo's character, when he goes to go get that, and she just writes, run, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. And that's why it works so well with Jacob's Ladder, because you have two types of movies that deal with different traumas and problems. This is a huge spoiler to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would like for you to kind of give a little brief synopsis of the movie with spoilers.
Okay.
So go ahead and discuss why you love this movie so much.
So the reason I love Shutter Island, because you feel like this is just a detective going to a mental institution to find Andrew Latus, someone who apparently set his apartment on fire, killed his wife, and his, I think at that point he only said his one son, right? Or something like that, I believe. Well, as you go through, you know, he interviews all the patients there. There's this mystery surrounding it all. And he constantly sees this woman coming out of the corner, covered in blood, telling him to, like, you got to get out of here, Teddy. You got to run, all this shit. Well, spoilers, essentially, for the ending. Even though this whole time you think he's a detective, the main character is a patient at this mental institution. He had murdered his wife, shot his wife, because she had drowned their kids.
Yep.
He was a U.S. Marshal for real.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came home from work, he was an alcoholic, all that other kind of stuff. And he knew that his wife had mental issues. I believe she was bipolar, I think.
Yeah.
She murdered her children. She drowned all three of them in the lake in their backyard. It's one of the saddest scenes.
Yep.
Him trying to bring them back to life, all that kind of stuff.
I hate it.
And, you know, she comes over and you can tell she knows what she did and she feels terrible, but her mental disease is taken over. And he shoots her and kills her. He has a psychotic breakdown. And he couldn't accept the fact of what happened. He even admits at the end of the movie, he feels that he was the reason his children were murdered because he didn't get her help.
Yep.
So this whole time, it's a big reveal that it was a role play, that the main psychiatrist tried to make him realize what he did, because if not, they were going to lobotomize him.
Yep.
And this will go into the ending later. He realized who he is. He admits to what happened, you know, at the very end. And they kind of give that, like, you know, Mark Ruffalo's character, Chuck, comes back over and he is back in that character, like, oh, so what are you thinking, boss? And, you know, he says, like, oh, we're going to get off this island, making you think he regressed back into his Teddy Daniels, his alternate persona. And then he says, well, what do you think? Would you rather want to, like, basically die a hero or live as a monster? And that lets you know right there, he's still himself, but he doesn't want to remember that shit.
Yep.
It's a heavy movie, dude.
It is.
And one of the ways that you know that they kind of reveal in a very small detail is the fact that Chuck calls him Teddy.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew doesn't respond.
Yep.
Fucking amazing. The amount of fucking plot twists. For me personally, when I watched it, I was like, what? There's no way. He was the crazy one the whole fucking time. The way that they use that nurse that disappeared that he found in the caves, which wasn't a real person.
Yep.
Wild to me. Yeah. Oh, no, so good.
The whole movie, look, you really just explained the acting, the writing slash plot, the killer, the casting, and there's no gore, the pacing, you know.
Yeah, there's really no gore. You see a lot of, like, blood splatter, but you don't see any decapitations, like, or anything like that.
Right. Martin Scorsese directing. Come on.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. soundtrack. Fucking... What music they had in there was fantastic.
Yeah.
Very stressful strings, you know, all that stuff. And
the cast to me is just like, dude, the guy that played Rorschach.
Yeah, Jackie Earle Haley.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Like,
yeah.
There's so much. There's so many other people like
Ben Kingsley, Mark Ruffalo. Media.
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. One of the biggest fucking action stars with Hulk and all that.
The Hulk. That's what
even though, you know, he doesn't deserve his own movie. Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams from fucking Dawson's Creek and all the, what, there was a couple other movies she was in. I don't remember. Bridget Jones's Diary. Isn't she her? Yeah. I don't know. There was a lot of movies with her in it, too.
This movie has gotten so much praise anyway. And I'm sure even me explaining the spoilers and stuff, there's probably people like, yeah, we know, dude.
We already know. Yeah. So why don't we just get right into it? What do you think? Pass, rent, or buy?
Buy. It is a buy. See this movie.
I would say it's probably on a ton of streaming services right now.
Hell
so
yeah.
You'll be able to watch it somewhere. But as per usual, like I say every episode, if it's $15, $20, don't buy it full price. Go to somewhere, some site. Usually Vudu has it, $5 a week or something. Amazon might have some deals. Don't spend all your money on, like, Shutter Island.
It's really good, though.
Yeah, it is really
good. It's definitely worth watching.
It is 100% worth watching. And I agree. It's worth having in your library. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just a rent. I think it's a permanent fixture.
Well, I want to ask, your first time watching it, like, I know this wasn't your first time watching it, but when you watched it for the first time, how did you feel about it? Because I'm always curious. You've probably seen all these horror films way before I have. So, your personal opinion, what do you think about Shutter Island?
I saw Shutter Island in the theater.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I saw it with almost a full theater. So, getting the experience of all the reveals and everything with everybody, it wasn't that everybody, like, lost their mind while it was happening, but there was audible, like, or holy what? Mm-hmm. Like, there was...
Yeah.
For most of all, it was quiet. Like, people were that into the fucking movie and that into the story with the ending of him trying to get the kids back and all that stuff. Like, it... Nobody fucking did a thing in the theater. It was quiet. And that is something that will always stick with me when seeing this movie, is the fact that when the movie was done, nobody clapped, nobody cheered, everybody just got the fuck up and left. That tells you.
Yeah.
Like, it takes you on a roller coaster for the 2 hours and how fucking long? 18 minutes that it doesn't even feel like?
Almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Nah, it's a solid fucking movie. Colors are fantastic. Yeah. Everything's amazing.
The cinematography.
Yeah, everything's perfect. It's just, it feels like Martin Scorsese and the crew basically put all the love that they could into the movie, and we couldn't have asked for anything better.
Anytime it is on, like, regular-ass cable television, I watch
it.
Hell
yeah.
I watch it. It's a fantastic movie.
Absolutely. Just like, just like last episode with World War Z.
Yep.
You put it on, it's on. It's,
yeah, might as well just watch it.
Might as well just fucking watch it. It's now on the TV for the rest of the day. So, yeah, 100%. You got anything else you want to say for this?
I just got to say, the acting in this movie is so good. Just DiCaprio's line towards the end when he goes, "If you love me, stop talking."
Yep.
It crushed me because, you know, he, like, the pain.
Yeah.
Like, even a lot of times in, like, the crying scenes in most, you know, movies, it's kind of like a little over the top crying, but I felt like so fucking bad for this guy.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, dude, an amazing film. I'm sorry. I can't give this enough praise.
No, you're perfectly fine. If you remember, you asked me if we could do an episode with Shutter Island, and you tasked me essentially to kind of find stuff to go around with it, and you already knew that you wanted to do Heavy Rain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfect. Jacob's Ladder, Shutter Island, Heavy Rain. It's just, it's all...
Yes.
It's all really well done with each other. So, yeah. Are we going to go on to...
The List of Doom.
It's time. Wait, which one? God damn it again.
The List of Doom. Each episode, we pick a theme to go along with the rest of the show. It's a top 5 list of movies, characters, events, music, or anything in between.
Shut Starship, you know what? You just made the list!
Oh no!
Oh, here we go.
And welcome to the List of Doom.
Yes.
Oh yeah. It's time.
Yes, it is. As with every episode, we do our top five of the episode. And this week's top five is top five movies about PTSD.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Clearly, as with every episode, we keep it loosey-goosey mm-hmm. in the terms of interpretation. So this could mean anything from, like we said earlier, what was the movie that we said?
I know you said, like, Coraline.
Coraline.
We were talking Alone.
About Home Alone. Home Alone with abandonment and all that stuff. That's PTSD. You know, so we're not necessarily staying in the horror realm.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to stay in the horror realm because of my interpretation. Most horror is PTSD.
Mine's a mix.
Josh, it's usually a mix with yours mm-hmm. when we keep it open for interpretation. And I think I like that because mm-hmm. you always bring stuff from like different aspects.
Right.
I kind of interpret it still mainly in the horror genre. Right. And I kind of like bend it to the horror genre. There's a few times where I've gone outside the box. But I like your interpretation of it, of just, let's fucking see where this takes us. And then there's also been a couple other people that have interpreted it that way, like, right. let's see where it takes us. Or, you know, a different type of thing. Like, they just go and list five movies with a very specific PTSD. Like, yep. it could mean anything. So, with that being said, as with every episode, we also mock Chills. Not because we hate him, but also fuck that guy. So, with that being said, I know that you have at least one honorable mm-hmm. mention this week, correct?
I do.
All right. So do you want to give yours? Because mm-hmm. I have two. Or do you want me to go for it? Like, it doesn't
matter. I'll just give mine. The one that I was going to put, and we talk about it a lot, would be Hereditary.
Okay.
Just because it deals with a lot of PTSD from him accidentally killing his sister.
Yeah. And then having to take over the role of the maiden, or not yep. the maiden, but the because the maiden was Midsommar. But the same essential thing. Yep. Fucking being Paimon's... holder, right. I guess you could say.
Yeah.
My two honorable mentions are Child's Play from 1988.
Okay.
Because imagine getting a fucking doll that's going to kill you.
Okay, fair.
And also Scream from 1996.
Okay, yeah.
Self-explanatory. Yeah. so with that, what's your number five?
So my number five is sticking a bit with war. And okay. it is Brothers from 2009, yeah. which features Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, Natalie Portman. Yeah. Tobey Maguire's character comes back from Afghanistan and all that kind of stuff and went through a lot of shit. That is a heavy-ass movie.
It is a very heavy movie,
and yeah. probably one of my more favorite Tobey Maguire films, to be honest with you. So that's my number five, Brothers.
All right. My number five is Jacob's Ladder from 1990. If we didn't get this movie, we wouldn't get Silent Hill. And Silent Hill is one of my all-time yep. favorite franchises. And just because of that one fact alone...
It gets the number five spot.
It gets the number five spot. But yeah. this movie was a fucking... You don't hear me use the term tour de force much because I feel like it's oversaturated when you talk about movies and shit.
I don't even know what that means.
Basically, it's a very powerful movie. Like it makes you go through all the emotions.
Okay.
And for me, Jacob's Ladder did. It hits on so many different fucking emotions and so many different forms of PTSD.
I agree. It made me sad.
Yeah. So it's gotta be on the top five. Has to be. For me at least. What's your number four?
So my number four, it stays in the realm of war again, the Vietnam War.
Okay.
It's a Tom Cruise movie, Born on the 4th of July from 1989. It's a soldier who becomes paralyzed. And you see him after trying to get used to living in this world post-war. And we all know basically what happened in the Vietnam War and with American soldiers. So it's a heavy film, and it's one of... I don't like many Tom Cruise movies, but this one I can actually watch. So my number four is Born on the 4th of July.
Fantastic. My number four is Us from 2019.
Holy shit, yeah.
Imagine being a bright, happy little girl and you get stuck in a upside down underworld life And you have to adapt to that and all the fucking horrors that go with it. And she just did and tried to take over everything. And
when they reveal, like, when they finally get that reveal, it's like, oh my God, could you imagine? Yep.
Could you imagine, like, the traumas? And then not to mention the one, you know, Lupita Nyong'o, I don't remember her name right now, but the trauma that she goes through realizing that she was the other.
Yep.
Like, yeah, that's, to me, that's pretty fucking hell crazy. Yeah. What's your number three?
My number three was actually on our Hidden Gems list, is Smile.
Oh.
From 2022.
Okay.
The main character watches one of her patients commit suicide with a giant creepy smile on her face.
Yep.
And after that, life goes to shit. Yeah, immediately.
Literally. Literally and immediately. Mm-hmm. 100%. My number three is Hereditary from 2018. Yep. That's
that story has been talked about so much, but it's so good. And you don't realize until, the theme of PTSD, I didn't realize that movie is just about PTSD.
Yeah, it's PTSD, but demonic possession. Yeah. And also the grandmother and all that shit, like the coping and all that. Like everything is just, and even the death of the daughter, all that shit. Like it's all just one big ball of PTSD. And Ari Aster, what a fucking master dickhead he is. What's your number two?
My number two is Midsommar from 2019.
There you go.
The main character deals with her sister, who also had a mental disorder, murdering her parents, and then she commits suicide.
Yep.
And then right after that, her boyfriend and his friends show her no kind of empathy, don't ask her shit, and they kind of treat her like shit.
And they try to get rid of her.
Yep.
They're really trying to get rid of her. Like, they're telling him, like, she's a piece of shit. And literally all she has is, like, abandonment issues and family problems, and she just wants to be loved.
Yep.
Yeah. So my number one and two take a different direction.
Okay.
All right. My number one and two, for me, I feel like, and I want to give a warning to both of them, because we've discussed both of these movies here, but I also want to give a trigger warning for rape, for mutilation, for everything in between.
Okay.
Because when we're talking about PTSD and we're talking about trauma, my number two is Martyrs from 2008.
Yeah.
She was literally basically like ripped apart for this whole thing, the traumas that she endured.
Yep.
Being a dog, being this, being that, being caged and shackled, and just holy fucking shit.
Yep. It's a heavy movie.
It is one of the heaviest movies. And I still talk about this movie to that day, to this day, when we saw episode 25.
Yep.
The remake is bullshit, but either way.
Ask me on a stick.
Yeah. What is your number two? Oh, wait, no.
That was Midsommar.
It was Midsommar. What's your number one? I always do that. Every now and then anymore.
My number one is actually one that we've kind of referenced, but we never really have discussed yet, is Pan's Labyrinth, 2006. It takes place after the Spanish Civil War.
Yep.
You get to see her reality bend after all this terrible shit has happened.
Yep.
It is a trippy-ass movie.
Huh?
I highly recommend it. Watch it once. Pan's Labyrinth is fucking amazing.
It is. And some of the most brutal fucking, like, army scenes.
The dude that gets smashed in the mouth with a beer bottle over and over.
Oh, my God.
Made me sick to my stomach when I saw that for the first time.
Yeah. And you saw that when you weren't, like...
Yeah.
When you were a little bit younger and you weren't into horror and you didn't like blood.
Nope. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like... what's the other Labyrinth one with David Bowie?
Yeah, Labyrinth.
Labyrinth, boom. I thought it was going to be, kind of like a silly adventure. Because the commercial
kind of made it seem like it was this, it was that, but
some mythical, fantasy world.
Yeah.
And then it was this, and I was like, holy shit, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, what the absolute fuck. With that being said, I want to give a shout out to Tideland. Tideland is a very horrifying movie about drug addiction and the things that come with it, and the little girl. Fantastic actor. She was in the Silent Hill movie, the first one.
Oh, shit. I've never heard of this film.
Yeah. It, one of the people from Monty Python, Terry Gilliam. Terry Gilliam directed it. Really offbeat, off-kilter movie. Horribly dark, twisted. Everything is just wrong. But I want to give a shout out to that movie because Tideland is a is another emotional fucking roller coaster. For me, my number one is I Spit on Your Grave from 2010.
I was going to ask you when we were done with the list and you did your final one. I was going to ask, is I Spit on Your Grave a PTSD movie?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That is 1000% a PTSD movie. As I said, rape, trauma, repeated shit, all that stuff. Like,
that is a heavy movie to watch.
Yeah. And then, you know, her getting her revenge and all that shit. Like, yeah, that's trauma inducing. That's what she felt like she needed to do to get revenge on them for their shit. Yep. So number one is number one with a bullet. And I love your list too. Your list is, like you said, like I said, it's a different interpretation.
Right.
It's a different interpretation. I love that, like, we go into opposite paths.
But they both make sense.
But they both make sense, exactly. So, and that's usually what happens on our damn show anyways. So, yeah, hell yeah, man. Good list, bro.
Very nice.
Very nice list, bruv. Very nice list. Meatballs.
But I don't feel like smiling.
Horrors of Gaming. Each episode, we pick a theme to go along with the rest of the show. It can be a list dissection or a game that stands out for us to discuss.
The killer is white, aged between 30 and 45. He doesn't act on impulse, but plans his crimes in a very meticulous fashion. He doesn't have anything personal against the victims. That's why he covers their faces with mud, to make them anonymous.
Why does he kill them if he doesn't have anything against them?
For him, they're more of an image, a symbol. That's probably why he gives them an origami figure and an orchid as gifts to apologize for what he's done to them.
Very interesting. And where does all that get us?
The best way of tracking a predator is to be familiar with his behavior.
That may be true in novels, but there's a child's life at stake here.
Continue, Jaden.
One detail attracted my attention. The interval between the time when a victim disappears and the time when the body is found ranges from 3 to 5 days. But the rainfall is always at 6 inches, give or take 10%.
What on earth does that mean?
All the victims were drowned in rainwater. The killer kills only in the fall when there is plenty of rain. It could be that he puts them in some sort of well or tank that is open to the skies and that fills up with rainwater. The more it rains, the less time the victim has to live.
And welcome to the Horrors of Gaming, the gaming portion of the show.
As with every episode, Josh lets me name the segment here because he writes it and everything. So I've named it, and I think this is my most apt title I've ever come up with, and that is Fuck This Emotional Bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to read this part, or do you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
Okay. Game name, Heavy Rain. Initial release date, February 23rd, 2010. We got a lot of Februaries.
And a lot of 2010s.
Yeah. Completion time, 10 hours, according to howlongtobeat.com. That is 10 hours just kind of going through the base story, not really exploring or doing anything else. Platforms were PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and Microsoft Windows. The developer was Quantic Dream. Engines were the NVIDIA Physics and Havoc engine. The genre is interactive drama and action adventure.
It's still surprising that horror is not part of that genre. It is a horror. It's basically a horror movie that you play.
Yeah.
Just like Until Dawn. But shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
So if you listen to our past episodes, we discuss Until Dawn and The Impatient. Let's travel back in time and discuss this juggernaut of a game that led to the creation of the two games I just mentioned. Heavy Rain tells a story of four different protagonists involved with the mystery of the Origami Killer, a serial killer who uses extended periods of rainfall to drown his victims. Heavy Rain is set in a city inspired by the city of Philadelphia. The main protagonist of Heavy Rain is Ethan Mars, which is funny too because his name's Ethan Mars, the protagonist. Resident Evil 7, Ethan Winters is the main protagonist.
Yep.
Anyway, Ethan Mars, who just after the 10th birthday of his son Jason, takes his wife Grace, his other son Sean, and of course Jason shopping. Not soon after arriving at the mall, Ethan loses track of where Jason is, and after frantically searching for him, Ethan sees his son about to be run over by a car. Ethan immediately jumps in front of the car to save his son, but both are struck by the vehicle, leading to Ethan being put into a coma and his son tragically losing his life. This is within the first 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah. It is already gonna fucking kill you. 6 months after he wakes up from his coma, Ethan, blaming himself for Jason's death, divorces his wife Grace and moves into a smaller rundown house compared to his much nicer house at the start of the game. Also, after waking from his coma, Ethan experiences mental trauma and blackouts. 2 years later, Ethan blacks out at the park with his other son, Sean. When he wakes up, he discovers that Sean has been kidnapped by the Origami Killer. Ethan must follow the instructions of the Origami Killer, who uses actual origami to give Ethan clues and tasks that he must complete to find his son. An example of a task Ethan must complete is cutting off one of his own fingers. And to make matters worse, because of his blackouts, Ethan starts to believe that he might be the Origami Killer.
Without giving away too much of the story, the other three protagonists are Norman Jaden, an FBI profiler, Madison Page, a journalist, and Scott Shelby, a private investigator. I said that right the first time. Mm-hmm. Of all of these characters in Heavy Rain are connected to the Origami Killer, but you'll just have to play the game to find out. Or listen to us talk about this game, because we're going to spoil it anyway.
Right, so we're going to give you 10 seconds of silence. Jesus fucking Christ, this goddamn game.
This game is amazing. And the funny thing is, too, another game that I would like to talk about in the future is called Indigo Prophecy, or Fahrenheit, made by the same guy. He felt that his first game was not that great. So he spent all of his time, and we talked about this before the podcast, he went to the city of Philadelphia to kind of get where he wanted the city of his game to be. 2,000 pages.
Yeah.
Written for this game.
Yeah. What the fuck?
I remember seeing the trailers for this game and being like, I have to get it. I want to play this game.
Yep.
Some of the best mystery with a horror game. Because there's action, but it's not your typical Resident Evil Silent Hill. You don't pick up weapons, none of that kind of stuff. The whole time you're wondering, who is this Origami Killer? All of these characters are connected. They'll all meet each other in different paths of this game.
Yep.
The attention to detail. Love it. There are literal parts in this game. I was literally just talking about this. The character Jaden, the guy who works with the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Your first scene with him, first scenario you play as him, is that he's investigating a murder by the Origami Killer. You can walk up right to where the game kind of forces you to go, and you can leave, and you'll move on.
Yep.
But if you take your time, and that's what I'm telling everyone, if you play this game, take your time every room you're in. You can continue and move up to basically another road, find more evidence. If you don't find certain things throughout this game with any character, it can screw over another one, or that character could die because of your choices.
Yep.
Just like with Until Dawn. Yep. Do you want to say anything? Because I feel like...
No. I was just going to say, like, I love that's really the way that it is. Like you were just saying, you could go down this fucking hill, up this area, around a bridge. And like you said previously, you don't go to the whole bridge. But if you don't find this piece of evidence that's really way far out there, that's going to fuck things up later in the game. And you've got your four protagonists, and depending on the choices you make, the route you go, and everything in between, you can either save the kid, kill the kid, not find the kid, live a happy life, not have a happy life, this character will live, this character will die. Yep. You can lose Ethan in the first fucking 20 minutes of the game, and the game will still progress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is absolutely a very different kind of game. And especially when it came out in 2010, nothing was prepared for that.
Like an example, to lose your main character, you are basically crawling through tunnels, and they're full of glass. And if you get lost, or you take your time getting through that section...
Yep.
Ethan will start to suffocate, and he will die in that part of the game, and it will continue, and you just won't have any parts with Ethan in it. It's wild. You can actually make characters, the four main ones, antagonistic whenever they meet. You can make them be friends. Madison, she's the love interest, or she can be.
Yep.
Right.
Because you can be mean to her, and she'll help you because you kind of have to progress the story.
Right.
But it won't be in the same way if you're super nice to her.
Right.
There are so many endings to this game. Seriously. The main character, Ethan, there's a version where he just kills himself at his son's grave. They've got it to where Ethan, Sean, and Madison are married, and they move on and have a happy life, and you get your happy ending. And it's not just all about Ethan, because, what was his name? Scott Shelby, the investigator. He's got his own subplot. You get invested in all of these characters. And I'm going to give a super spoiler warning again. 5 more seconds. If you've never played this game, the big reveal at the end is Scott Shelby, the private investigator, is the origami killer. And the reason why, and you get to play this flashback, his dad was abusive to Scott and his brother. They left the house. They went off exploring. I think they went through a construction site.
Yep.
And his brother, I think he fell into the, I think it was like a canal or something because of the rain.
And his leg got caught.
Right. And where this game takes place, it's raining like all the time. It's basically like Seattle like when Seattle, it rains. He lost his brother. And after that, he started to hold a grudge against fathers who didn't pay attention to their children.
Right.
And it's weird, too. I forget why I haven't played this game in so long. He even explains why he went after Ethan. Even though he saved his son, he still didn't because he wasn't paying attention.
Right.
And he got lost in the mall. So it's fucking crazy because you as a father, I'm sure that game was heavy as hell. Heavy rain, you know.
Well, that goes with all of our chosen segments today. Jacob's Ladder, losing a child.
Right.
Shutter Island, losing your children. This game, losing your children. Like, everything has that theme. And as a father, that shit fucking sucks. I could never imagine losing one of the kids for just a second. Like, I'm sorry. I'm very protective of my children.
Right.
It's this world, this area, this everything, no matter what. You hear stories of abduction, this, that, all the time. Nope. Fuck that.
Like, sticking with the theme, like you just said, when, like, with Shutter Island and all this, and whenever it involves these horror films with someone's children, I think... How is Rob taking this? Because I don't have any children. I don't have any kids.
Right.
You do. So whenever these kind of topics come up, I'm always like, I wonder how Rob's reacting when he watched this. Like, Shutter Island. I've always been curious.
Like, if I were to lose one of my kids, I wouldn't be here anymore. It's simply put. Like, if I lost both my kids or whatever, I mean, like, it, the emotional trauma of something like that happening would defeat me completely and totally. I am protective of my children. I do pay attention to my kids for that reason. Like, I mean, you know, do I deprive them of lives and stuff? Absolutely not. But they know the dangers of everything out there. They're not stupid. They're not, you know, it's all very horrifying and it's a real reality. You know, there's how many kids are missing and abducted and this and that every fucking day. Like, and
it's,
how
it's
many,
terrible.
It is. So I 100% going back to this game now, like I what did they ever say, like, why Ethan has these like blackouts?
It's just the trauma from losing his son.
It's right. So
I'm sorry to cut you off. The reason why he starts to believe that he's the origami killer is because every time he has a blackout and he wakes up, he has origami in his hand.
Right.
He's thinking that he's leaving himself notes.
Right. Right.
Or it's kind of like a split personality kind of situation.
Right.
Because the first
time... Which is what it seems like. The game makes it seem like it. Yes.
Right. Because when he has his first blackout, when his son gets taken away, he's not even near that park anymore. He's on some random street and he wakes up and he's almost hit by a car again. And that's when he runs back and he's screaming, "Sean, Sean," and he's gone. And then he finds another piece of origami.
Right.
So that whole time, and that's what's amazing about this game. At one point, I was like, is he the origami killer?
So when you think about it, realistically, the origami killer went after this dude for no reason. It's not necessarily that he's not paying attention to his kid. He's got trauma that's unchecked from losing his other kid.
The origami killer is doing this because of his own PTSD.
Right.
It's just, as I said earlier, a big old PTSD ball.
Yep.
Your one person has unchecked PTSD doing this to another person who has unchecked PTSD. Yep. In this case, two wrongs definitely do not make a right.
And to add on before we end, there's actually a DLC for this. I forget the name of the DLC itself, but you play as the journalist, Madison Page, and she's looking into the origami killer, and she is... She ends up at some random house, and she goes in to investigate, and it's the house of another serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
The dude, and again, it's been years since I played the DLC, but I think this dude, like, makes people into dolls. Like, kind of like House of Wax a little bit. Except in this one, the killer comes home, and you spend that whole DLC hiding in each room.
The taxidermist.
There you go. Boom.
Yep. That's it. Yeah, so as I'm reading, sorry.
No, you're good.
There were supposed to be more of these.
Really?
There were supposed to be more episodes and more different things, but they just never did it.
Huh.
Heavy Rain Chronicles were intended to be a series of short downloadable prequels to Heavy Rain. Only one episode, The Taxidermist, was released, though at least two more were confirmed to be in development, including one that would have focused on the beginnings of the Origami Killer. The DLC is only included on the PlayStation 3 release of the game. The PS4 remaster and the PC releases do not include it.
Yep.
Wow.
But to go on with how, like, you know, as you play through it, different choices you make can determine how the end of this DLC goes. You can either sneak your way out, not be seen by the killer at all. Of course, you know, to make it more tense, the person knows, like, oh, someone's in here. I need to search the whole house. Or they can find you and you spend like 10 minutes running away from this dude. And you end up in his garage with the door closed and you have to basically evade this dude. I don't think he has a chainsaw. He's got something. But it's crazy. You can have like a super fight with this guy or just sneak out and get away. It's crazy. This game, please play it. If you have any way to play this game, play it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I want to go back and play more of it because when it came out, I got it on PlayStation Plus. Like it came out like the next year, I think, on PlayStation Plus, like the year after. It was one of the first games that they had for like the $9.99 PS Plus. So it's on my library somewhere in there. I just don't know what it would look like on a PS5 because it's the PS3 version.
Still looks good.
It still looks perfect.
It looks like a PlayStation 3 game.
But okay, they didn't up-res it or anything like that.
I wish they did. If they came out with a remaster, I'd be getting
it. Because the PlayStation 4 was a remake or a remaster or remake. Which one was it?
They just gave it a fresh coat of paint.
Okay, so, all right. Yeah, definitely check this game out.
Please do.
Because it is wild.
Amazing.
Yeah.
100%. I would say for me, it's above Until Dawn. And I love that game too.
I know you do. You've been waiting to talk about Heavy Rain for a fucking year now.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to add?
Play the game. It's amazing.
Play the fucking game.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The foulest stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
This is the end. The end, my friend. The end. The Doors.
Oh, okay.
It's the end.
The end.
Yeah, you gotta give it the old British try. Can you actually, like, really do that?
The end. I don't know how to say end in British. The end. I really don't know.
The end.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, whatever. So that's the end.
How many times can we say the end?
Right. We had quite the episode today, man.
I keep using the word heavy, but it was a heavy-ass episode.
It was a very heavy episode. Sorry, I am fucking beat. We have discussed quite a lot with this movie, like the theme of PTSD. That is, post-traumatic stress disorder is varying. Mm-hmm. It's vast. It doesn't have any type of, I don't know. You can be traumatized for the rest of your life over one of the most mundane things to everybody else. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the weirdest things. Like, I was listening to an episode of Time Suck where one of these fucking serial killers remembered that his mom didn't wipe him right when he was like 3 years old and Holy still shit. In a diaper. So what? He went off and started killing people because like of that.
Holy shit. Who was this?
Do you remember? I don't remember. It was on an episode of Time Suck. It was a few episodes back, like 20 or so. I have to remember.
Holy shit.
But that's where, if you ever hear him talk about, you go pee pee on a potty like a good boy. That is from that episode.
Oh shit.
It's very weird episode, but PTSD comes in all shapes, forms, and sizes. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to war to have PTSD. Yep. You don't have to really inherently have anything to have PTSD. You could have moved one too many times in your life, and that'll give you fucking PTSD. Like, what, before we, like, go into the happy stuff here, what kind of PTSD do you think is, like, I won't say the worst, but one of the worst that you have come across so far, like that damages somebody so badly? Like, what have you seen when you think of PTSD? Like, what is the first thing you think of?
A lot of stories that I hear, like, from people talking about is just abandonment.
Yeah.
A lot of people leave, like, walking out of their lives, and it messes them so much to where they either become obsessed with someone or they just get so fearful to where they don't want to even make friends because they're scared everyone's just going to leave them.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. And going back to the Time Suck podcast, shout outs. A lot of them have abandonment issues too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mommy issues, daddy issues.
And it's fucking crazy to think that, like you said, anything can make someone snap. And not to the point where they become serial killers, but just to where they're just regular life is scary to them.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be scary. Like, we're gonna talk about it, so let's talk about it. Akira Toriyama passed away on March 1st.
Right.
He was a very huge and influential part of my life. Which, and millions of others.
For those who don't know, is the creator of Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z,
Dr. Slump, all the other things, Dragon Quest, all that shit. Yep. He did the art, he did the stories, he did all that. This man is a absolute fucking legend and tank.
Oh yeah.
In the manga and anime world, Shonen series wouldn't be Shonen series without Dragon Ball. Yep. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says. If it wasn't for Dragon Ball laying that foundation and Dragon Ball Z taking it to go in that series direction, we wouldn't have half the fucking shows we have right now. Bleach, Naruto, any of them. Mm-hmm. I don't care. One Piece, Jujutsu Kaisen, any of these type of shows, whether they're season or whatever, we wouldn't have them if it was not for Akira Toriyama.
Yep.
And that is a PTSD as well. I'm almost 40. I'm going to be 40 in July. I just saw Sting retire a few days ago. Akira Toriyama passed away. This is the 10th year anniversary of my father's passing. Of one of my very dear friend Junie's passing, and of course, the 10th year anniversary of Cody.
Yep.
Trauma, PTSD, doesn't mean war.
Yep.
You have your own wars going on inside of you all time, 24/7. And if you need help, there are so many ways out there to get help. Please just look online. There's suicide prevention, there's 911, there's all sorts of stuff.
I was actually going to say, if we didn't mention, say, please, if you feel like you need help, please get help.
Yeah. Because the world's, like you said, it's we're using it at a long pace this week, but it's heavy.
Yeah.
The world is a heavy fucking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because where I was a couple days ago when I heard about everything, because it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before, I just sat here and I cried for like 40 minutes. I was alone. It wasn't just Akira Toriyama. It was so many different things that just piled up.
Right.
And there's that... The way that you handle things, the way that you do things, the way that you react to things, that's all in response to stress, traumatic, everything that happens. So, with that...
shall we switch to a more upbeat topic, maybe?
Yeah, because if not...
Holy shit, we'll just get more depressed.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's end it on a happy note.
Yeah.
We got... A Star Is Harmony coming in a few weeks.
Yep.
We're still planning on some cool things for that, like we talked about at the top of the show. We do have our 25th episode of Horror Tube coming next week.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy that we've got 25 episodes of Horror Tube.
Horror Tube.
And we're going to kind of do it right, I guess you could say.
Yep.
We're going to do, what verses do you want to see?
For example, we all know Freddy versus Jason.
Yep.
But there's so many horror icons out there. Maybe we need to see who we would want to see fight each other.
And also, like, something that I didn't fucking know about until, like, I think earlier this year was, I think it was Friday the 13th versus Texas Chainsaw Massacre versus Ash or some shit like that.
Holy shit, what?
Yeah, it was like Jason versus Leatherface versus Ash or some crazy shit. It was a comic series. Hold on.
It's funny that they throw in a protagonist into that.
Yeah.
Like Ash.
Hold on. I gotta remember where I saw this from. Because I think that's what it was. It was Friday. Yeah, Jason versus Leatherface. That's exactly what it was. Jason versus Leatherface. It was done by Topps.
Well, holy shit.
Issue number one is worth $100 goddamn right now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So they actually did do Jason versus Leatherface. And it wasn't Ash. I thought Ash was in there for some reason.
Hey, it made sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does.
It wouldn't surprise me.
There is a couple comics with Ash in it, though. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, as the central... portion of like the verses, mm-hmm. I guess you would say. So yeah, that's the topic for Horror Tube. Do you actually want to see a live action fucking Leatherface versus Jason, not just a comic? That'd be dope.
Hey, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
It'd be different.
Let's save that rabbit hole for next week.
Oh yeah, on Horror Tube.
On Horror Tube. So
also, real quick, speaking of Ash, is there any more updates on the next Evil Dead movie? I know there's some news, but
no.
Oh,
nothing yet.
Because okay.
I think they're still trying to keep a bunch of it secret.
Keeping their cards close to the chest.
Yeah, and especially with how they revealed that they're going to kind of go the martyr's route of things with this one.
Oh, good.
Because it's going to be French horror. Like,
oh, yeah.
They said extreme right. French horror. So, batten down the fucking hatches. And it's going to be coming out next year, Halloween.
Oh, we got to go see that in theater.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Absolutely. We're going to go get breakfast first, too. Just like we did with Evil Dead Rise. So, on that note... Let's get the fuck out of here, sir.
We will see you in 2 and 2. Shout out to Chuck Woolery.
Shout out to motherfucking Chuck.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Again, my name is Lamont, and I appreciate you sticking around for this ending message. You can find me at Vilcato on Instagram. Also, be sure to follow Horror Wars on all social media platforms, including TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, and everywhere in between. If you want to leave a horror question, comment, or say something about the show, please drop us an email at horrorwarspodcast@gmail.com. See you next time, and remember, keep it classy with a dash of slashy.
Hear everything that happened on that date. We'll do it in 2 and 2. Be right back.